the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto-related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Stablecoins are becoming a huge part of the crypto space. We're talking about stablecoins like Tether, also known as USDT, and another one called USDC, both of them backed by real dollars. These have become crucial for businesses dealing with financial turbulence. With the US dollar index down 8% in recent months and world currency markets looking shaky, stablecoins are proving to be an interesting and pretty reliable solution for cross-border transactions. People are finding out that transacting with stablecoins is much quicker than dealing with the banks, and they're also much cheaper. What's new, though, is their growing use for companies with global supply chains, helping them to minimize currency risk without the normal banking delays and fees. We're going to look into this, and to do that, we're going to be joined by Craig Stewart, General Counsel for Yellow Card, and we're going to look into what is happening behind the rise of stable coins. Welcome, Craig. Thanks very much for joining us on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. It seems people and businesses now have an alternative to traditional dollars. Maybe start off, explain what stablecoins are. How big has this market become?
Yeah, so stablecoins, right, which are a digital asset, if you will, you know, pegged to the United States dollar and, well, not necessarily to the dollar, U.S. dollar stablecoins, obviously. They could be pegged to any currency, but dollar, U.S. dollar stablecoins account for over 99% of the stablecoin market. It's small in relation, obviously, you know, the global monetary system, but it's grown to $240 billion market cap. When last year at this time, the market cap was only $140 billion, and if you look back to 2017, when stablecoins were essentially launched, it was $1 billion. So it's a very rapidly growing market.
Now, the big attraction, of course, is the speed with which you can transact with stable coins, and the costs are much lower than dealing with a bank. The volumes traded are still, though, a tiny fraction of what happens daily in the forex market that's handled by the banks. Do you see this eventually going to challenge the traditional forex market?
I don't necessarily think it'll challenge the forex market, but what I do think it can challenge is payment systems in emerging markets, and particularly in places like Africa, where there are a number of challenges associated with making payments. There are high costs associated with making payments, whether that's, you know, businesses making payments, paying invoices, importing goods, whether that's people remitting money, for example, from the United States or Europe, maybe back home to Africa. Stablecoins enable people to do that much more efficiently and much less expensively than the traditional system allows for.
Now, talk about some of the use cases or the other use cases for stablecoins. You know, when it first launched onto the market, they were used by crypto traders to park profits. Bitcoin went up. They would then be able to switch into a US dollar stablecoin like Tether and just wait for the market to settle or the Bitcoin to drop, and they would buy back in again without having to leave the crypto space. But there's been some changes in that now. There's other use cases that have come to the fore. I notice more and more companies, particularly in emerging economies like South Africa, Zimbabwe, Zambia, and places like that, they're using stablecoins as a way to hedge against local currency weakness. Is this what you're finding?
Yeah, we see that for companies as well as individuals, right? And you want to do that with what's happening in a lot of African countries in terms of currency depreciation, you can't get access to dollars. U.S. dollar stable coins, right, is a way to do that. The other thing, though, is also, again, for payments. And if you have to import goods, there are 70% of African economies that are at crisis levels of U.S. dollar liquidity shortages. So if you need to import, and sometimes this is critical goods, right, pharmaceuticals and other things, and you don't have access to dollars, where do you get it? Well, U.S. dollar stable coins is a proxy for those dollars and allows African companies to make payments for international goods.
That does raise the question then, how do companies, let's say in South Africa, using stable coins, how do they do that without violating local exchange control regulations?
Yeah, well, maybe we'll take Africa generally and then talk a little bit about South Africa. So, you know, in in most of the African, or at least where we operate, most of the African countries where we operate, you won't see many foreign exchange or capital controls, or at least if there are some, they'll be very liberalized. South Africa is obviously a bit different, as a more complex set of foreign exchange controls. At the moment, in no country does the do the exchange control regulations really include stablecoins, you know, and apply to stablecoins. That being said, in South Africa, both us and other market participants, you know, tend to make customers, whether those be companies or individuals, remind them of their obligations, right, under Exchange Control Act, and kind of take measures to make sure that, you know, we're not helping them to do something that they're not otherwise allowed to do.
Yeah, I mean, as of the end of this month, there's a new rule in South Africa for cryptocurrencies, stable coins in particular, I guess, would be part of that. It's called the travel rule. I'm sure you've heard of that. And that means that any amount above 5,000 Rand is going to have to be reported to the Financial Intelligence Center here in South Africa. And essentially, what my understanding of it is that they have to, when you're doing a transaction or you're receiving funds from abroad, as Yellow Card or as Luno or Valo or any one of these exchanges, you have to know the person who's receiving has got to be KYC'd on the other side, know your customer rules. In other words, you've got to have two identifiable people on that particular transaction. Does that introduce complications in your business?
Not really. You know, there's been cash transaction reporting, right, in the industry generally for a long time. So now it's a little bit different when you're dealing with electronic transfers and things like that and crypto transfers. I wouldn't say it involves complications. It introduces things that maybe previously in the crypto world, you know, haven't been there for some time. But you know, we are compliant with the travel rule, and you know, will be in South Africa from April 30th when it enters into effect for the crypto companies, and we do so in many other places. But it does involve what I would call some engineering and other, you know, protocols and design and development, right, in order to be able to track those transactions and gather that information.
I think for a lot of people in the crypto space, that is the end of privacy. You know, one of the great dreams a lot of the libertarians had was that you'd be able to transact and nobody would know what you were doing. I think those days are well and truly behind us. But another use case that I wanted to bring up with you is treasury services. Companies in Africa who want to hedge themselves against local currency weakness, taking their local currency, be it the Malawian kwacha, the Zambian kwacha, the Kenyan shilling, whatever it is, and putting that into a US dollar stable coin. And, you know, if you look back at the depreciation of some of these African currencies, they're quite horrific. You know, it's sometimes 25%, even 40% a year. Are you seeing much use in that sense?
Yeah, we're seeing, I would say, a growing use in that sense. Again, we see most use for payments. But with the larger companies, you know, you have there are big multinationals, for example, that have tens of millions of dollars trapped in Nigeria, right, where they're holding on the local naira. And because of the scarcity, you know, of dollars over a period of time there, or unattractive rates, right, they're unable to get that money out of the country and to repatriate it to their home country. So with stable coins, we see more and more not only using it for payments, but doing exactly as you suggest, converting into US dollar stable coins as the proxy for the dollar, then they can hold that and not be subject to the effects of what happens with the Nigerian naira, which, as you mentioned, with a lot of currencies in Africa, can sometimes be quite volatile.
And one of the interesting discussions that has happened around US dollar stable coins is that they could threaten the US dollar as the world's reserve currency. In fact, it appears the opposite is true, because it's actually increasing demand for dollars, because every tether that you buy has got to be backed by real world dollars or something very close to it, like a very short-term treasury bill or something like that. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think you see that in the Trump administration's approach towards digital assets and stable coins. I think, you know, if I was in their position, to your point, you know, I would think of U.S. dollar stable coins as a way of maintaining the hegemony of the U.S. dollar.
Interesting. All right. So you're based in London. You're the general counsel for Yellowcard, but you've got quite a bit of experience in Africa and also in the financial space. Briefly tell us about your background and how you ended up at Yellowcard.
Yeah, sure. I spent most of my career as a lawyer, although dipped in and out several times. When I was partnered a large law firm, Latham & Watkins, I was doing a lot of Africa work when I was based in Dubai and Qatar. And to date, have done transactions in, I think, 31 countries on the continent. Yellowcard, you know, appealed to me because of what it was doing in the financial services space, new technologies, financial technologies, but also the fact that the company was pan-African and allowed me to kind of combine a passion for travel across Africa with, you know, kind of professional ambitions, if you will.
All right. Finally, for those who are not familiar with Yellowcard, tell us a bit about the company. How does it fit into the crypto space? I mean, I think it is founded in the United States. You're based in London, but your primary markets are in Africa.
Correct. So the company was founded by two, at the time, university students in America who had a Nigerian business profession, you know, a university business profession, who at one time they were talking to him and he was complaining he had to get on to, you know, one of the money transfer companies to send his money, his mother some money in Lagos. And he was sending her $200 and she was going to receive $140, right? And they thought, wow, that, you know, that's incredulous. How can that happen? At the time, they were trading Bitcoin on Craigslist. You know, this was back in like 2015, 2016. And they said, hey, why don't you send her some Bitcoin? At the time, you couldn't do that. And that's really where the genesis for Yellowcard was formed. So they formed the company in 2016, launched the first product in 2019 in Nigeria. And since then, we've grown to over 250 employees across 20, offering our services across 20 countries in Africa. 98% of our employee base is in Africa. We're on the ground locally, local subsidiaries, employ people locally, you know, pay the local taxes, et cetera, in all of the local markets. And essentially what we do as a service is to orchestrate payments in stable coins for businesses or individuals seeking to, you know, move money in or out or within Africa on a daily basis. And since we launched in 2019, we have facilitated over $5.5 billion worth of transactions. We're a venture capital backed company in the U.S. with some of the largest and most prominent U.S. VCs in the fintech space. We also have $50 billion plus public companies like Coinbase and Block as our investors. And we're continuing to expand our product and geographic base, not only in Africa, but through other parts of the emerging world.
You gave that example of one of the founders trying to send $200 to his mom in Lagos, and it costing, it sounds like 30% in being taken in fees. How have you reduced the fees for people sending money to Lagos?
So if you look at, you know, the average, according to the World Bank, transfer rate, you know, remitting money to Africa is around 9%. When you go, that's from outside of Africa. When you go inter-country in Africa, in some cases, it can be high as 20 or 30%. We've taken that, you know, those costs down to essentially, you know, a fraction of a percent, or maybe around, you know, 1%, in order to make that happen. And how do we do that? We do that by using technology, cutting out a lot of the, you know, the infrastructure required for traditional fiat transfers, and essentially, you know, enabling the user, whether it be a company or individual, to send or receive, right, the bulk of the value.
Right. So the person receiving the funds, would they have to be, to get those kind of very low costs, would they have to be a Yellowcard customer as well, or would it just be anybody with a Tether address?
No, they don't have to be, they do not have to be on the Yellowcard platform, so to speak. So, and we have, for example, remittance companies and other types of payments companies like PayPal, where users can send money from, or those customers can send money from the United States, and it can end up in any of the 20 countries, recipient in any of the 20 countries we operate. And that may happen depending on what the sender wants to do. Could happen by a mobile money transfer, could happen by a bank transfer. And it's also, it's instantaneous. So, you know, somebody sends money from the United States to you in South Africa, right? The only limitation is really the telecommunications network and how it's working or whatever. But I mean, normally it would happen in a few seconds.
All right. So you've got a number of different off-ramp ways to off-ramp these funds. One of them would be mobile money. I guess another would be if the person's got a Tether wallet. Could it also appear in the person's bank account? But there would then, of course, would be other costs involved in that.
It can also appear in the person's bank account.
What about the case of somebody who's in Nigeria or in South Africa and he wants to buy stable coins through Yellow Card? Can he do that and still enjoy the same benefits, the same low costs of transferring out to, let's say, United States?
Yes. If you look at, for example, or even intra-Africa, if you look at someone in South Africa, let's say there's a Nigerian working in South Africa, right, and sending money back home, they're able to onboard with Yellow Card in South Africa. They can purchase USDT, and then they can send it to family member or whatever in Nigeria who is able then to sell the Naira back to Yellow Card. And take the Naira and do, you know, whatever it is that they want to do with the Naira. And there are ways as well for that to happen. South African wants to send money to someone in the United States, or really what we're building is more networks for anywhere around the world so that eventually, there wouldn't be any place that someone from South Africa who was a Yellow Card customer wouldn't be able to send money. The technology and the integration and the architecture, the user experience is such that if you're the user, you don't need to know anything about stable coins, technology, crypto assets, whatever. What you see is I've got this much RAND and I want to send it to the United States. How much is the person that I'm sending it to going to receive in dollars, right? And that's all you need to know, right, is what am I sending? What is my recipient receiving? And what happens in between stablecoin, USDT, USDC, PYUSD, conversion technology, doesn't matter to you.
So if you're able to buy stablecoins using local currency, are you not then taking on the local currency risk?
We are. In our case, we are not a peer-to-peer network. So we do not match companies or individuals with other companies or individuals. We are actually the market maker in some cases. In other cases, we're the intermediary. South Africa, we're an intermediary. Other places, we're a market maker. But you do not have to rely on finding someone else. We take care of that for you, and you see upfront before you buy or sell, right, what the rates are, which of course, change on a regular basis. But generally, we like to think that in South Africa and in other places, we have the best rates in the market.
Okay, finally, I think I did say this a while ago, finally, but this is final. Where do you see the stablecoin market? You spoke about the growth of market cap, $140 billion a year ago, $240 billion this year.
Yes.
Where do you see it in 2 or 3 years?
Exponential growth, right? I think well beyond $1 trillion and more. And I think what we will see is we will see more mainstream, participants like banks and others move into the market. That generally takes some time, right? I mean, banks aren't necessarily the most nimble. Sometimes things also from a regulatory standpoint, although I would say Africa is probably, my experience, the most progressive continent. And South Africa, probably one of the most progressive jurisdiction when it comes to regulation of the sector, right? But I think you will see that grow exponentially. Our founder, co-founder, likes to, he believes that the stable coin system in emerging markets will one day replace SWIFT. So, and if you've seen, you know, you've all experienced the slowness, the inefficiency, and I guess the cost, right, of sending money outside of your home country, right? And I think once you spend some time doing that on a stable coin platform like Yellowcard, you know, you'll wonder why you would ever go to the bank. It's almost the same thing as if, I don't know anyone who transfers money from international wire from their bank, right, to another bank, right? You look for a specialist, you know, forex broker, currency providers, or whatever, that can do that at a fraction of a cost than, say, a major global bank. And now you're getting the opportunity with platforms like Yellowcard to do it at, you know, even a much lesser cost.
Yeah, and just interesting to note that Tether, which is the market leader, USDC is the second. Tether's profit in 2024 was $14 billion with a staff of 150 people.
Yes.
Making it the most profitable company in the world per capita, I understand. It's quite extraordinary. And I think that profit figure is more money than made by BlackRock and JP Morgan and companies like that.
Yes. And, I certainly the amount of effort, right, that probably goes into making that money is not as complex, say, a business as a BlackRock, right, or a JP Morgan.
We're going to leave it there. Craig Storr, General Counsel for Yellowcard. Thanks very much for joining us, Craig.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.